Lane Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Welcome back. Welcome back. Let's let Ma Carter finish that. Listen, it's going to be a chilly week. I kind of said it was. It probably ain't going to be chilly enough. I'll be frank. I could, you know, even on the coast, we could use a little more chilly this winter. Let's hope it stays cool. Let's keep it cool. We want to keep it cool through January. It'll make life easier for all the rest of, for the rest of the year. Make a big difference. So we're looking forward to that. But it is going to be a chilly week, and as January is supposed to be, right? So what are you going to do while it's chilly like this, and while it's raining, and while it's windy? Oh man, I hope you ain't out in a boat today. All these things, all through the state, it's going to be wet. Snow in Choctaw County. Are you fathoming that? Listen, snow is penetrating into South Alabama. Probably ain't gonna get to Mobile, but it's there in the upper part of the counties. A lot of people are going to see some nasty weather. So what do you do when it's cold like this, when the weather's like this? What do you do? Well, you know, during summer when it's hot and you just get, what do you think about? You think about winter vegetables in the middle of summer. That's what I always do. I think about, man, what am I going to plant in winter? And that's about the right time to be thinking about it, because you got to order the seeds in. So what are you going to do today while it's cold and miserable? You're going to think about tomatoes. We're going to think about tomatoes. We're going to think about melons. Oh, I'm going to think about them a little bit anyway. They're a pain in the patootie, but we're going to think about them. We're going to think about beans. We're going to think about peppers. We're going to talk about eggplants. We're going to talk about okra. We're going to talk about lots of fine things, because this is the time of year. You know it's the time of year because it's too cold to plant them. Not too cold to plant tomatoes. You plant them in a little six-pack or a little tray, a seedling tray, and you grow them out on your windowsill. That's what we're talking about. That's what we're starting now. So we're going to talk about those varieties that are good for the summer. Because we have to start now. This is the way life is in Alabama. This is the way things are. We do not live. Well, you know where we don't live. You ought to know where we don't live. We don't live in New Jersey. We don't live in Minnesota. We don't live in places that have short summers and long winters. We have a very short winter. And we have a very distinctive summer. And it's long. In fact, there are three summers. Three very distinctive summers. And we've got to get those tomatoes ready for that first summer, which is American summer. American summer, that beautiful summer season when the rains back off just a little bit. We don't get as much rain. Kind of nice. Humidity often drops on a lot of days. Nights are very cool. Days get a little hot. Perfect for tomatoes, man. That is just what tomatoes love. That season around Mobile starts about April 15th. Yep. And last until June 15th. If you're a little farther north, it'll start a little later. Maybe 15 days later by the time you get to Montgomery. By the time you get to Birmingham, it may be even 30 days later when American summer starts. But nonetheless, American summer comes. It's a very distinctive season. It's very different than that summer that starts in the middle of June on the Gulf Coast. A little later, perhaps in the rest of the state, where every night is just blistering hot as well as the days. The tomatoes are not going to do well. The bugs are going to eat you alive, and you're going to have all kind of complaints. So here's the thing: we start talking about tomatoes really early, and that's a nice thing because you can warm up on a day like today, thinking about tomatoes. Thinking about tomatoes. Let's start with tomatoes, because I know that's where a lot of you start. You know, if it were up to me, we'd start talking with peppers, but you ain't there yet. You're going to get there one of these days, but you ain't there. You're with tomatoes, and that's okay, because tomatoes are fine things, too. And you like them a lot, and that's good. Let's talk about tomatoes. What we want from tomatoes. What do we want from tomatoes? We want to eat them. We want to eat as many tomatoes as possible. We want them to be really delicious. Mm-mm. And to achieve those two things on the Gulf Coast, we got to get started early. We got to get our tomatoes in the ground by before March 15th. Get a little longer if you're up in Birmingham, a little longer up in Huntsville. But on the Gulf Coast, you got to get them in the ground by March 15th as early as possible if you can. We can talk about some of the devices you can use later, but we are getting them ready. And then we got to talk about varieties. And I just want to talk about tomato varieties because it'll warm your soul to think about them on a day like today. All these different tomato varieties. Don't feel like you should be growing the same tomato varieties they're growing in New Jersey and Ohio and wherever else they grow tomatoes. Because we don't have a climate like that. And the tomatoes that they brag about are tomatoes that are going to do really well in their climate. Now, I've had some of those tomatoes, and I've had them grown in the climate that they, you know, that they're akin to, that they grew up in. Things like, some of the Amish tomatoes and all that, they're fine. They're okay. Brandywine, they're all right. They're fine. They're not the tastiest. Honestly, they're not the tastiest tomatoes in the world. They're okay. They're pretty good. You know, they're pretty. If they're grown in those places, they are not going to have that flavor in Alabama because these were varieties. Heirloom varieties are varieties that were selected for a particular place and a particular climate. And every time you see that word heirloom, if you think it means something special, it does, but not what you think. What it means is that this variety more than likely is going to have a very narrow area in which it functions well, in which it performs well. Brandywine is one of those varieties. The big beefsteaks that you read about and they show in garden magazines, they're some of those heirloom varieties oftentimes. They are probably not going to do well for us, and there's several reasons why. One is they take a long time to produce. Maybe 80 days, 90 days, 100 days for some of those varieties. And they don't produce a lot of tomatoes. And so what's going to happen is those fancy heirloom tomatoes that you're reading so much about, they're going to, even if you get them planted by the end of March, because it's going to take them longer to grow out, get them all seedlings ready to go. Even if you get them planted by the end of March, April, May, June is when you're going to get your first tomato. And that first tomato is more than likely going to have some bug damage on it. And you've got five tomatoes on that plant because those big fat tomatoes, they don't produce a lot of tomatoes. And then about the time you pick one nice tomato off that plant, and you know what happens after that? Boom. It's done. You're over. Because the heat of summer is coming on. Those tomatoes are not going to do well. They're not even going to have the flavor. So what do we pick? What do we do? Well, one of the things I've been thinking a lot about is we never really developed tomatoes that were great for the Gulf Coast. We had a few varieties. Most of them were not developed for really the Deep South. Even tomatoes we talk about like Creole tomatoes, well, in a way, there ain't such of a thing as a Creole tomato, and you can call me and we can talk about it. Atkinson is something that's sold here, but Atkinson was developed for Auburn. It was developed for North Alabama, not for the Gulf Coast. It's okay. It's an okay tomato, not a great tomato. It's an okay tomato, pretty good, particularly in central Alabama. But how do we find tomatoes that are really well-suited to us? So I've been looking in places that have summer temperatures similar to ours. And I can tell you, I found some incredible tomatoes. We're going to talk about those when we come back. We're going to talk about your garden questions. Give us a call, 251-343-0106.
And their brothers in arms. So it went for Joseph Warren. And it should have been different. It could have been easy. His reign could have saved him. But a country unborn needs bravery. And it spread like wildfire.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
All right, welcome back. It is a Gulf Coast Sunday morning. So I get to talk about tomatoes, which is already warming. You know, tea helps. I got a little cup of tea here. Charlie let me step out and get that. I let Charlie step out. We traded off. I got a little cup of tea here, and that's warming me up, but also thinking about these tomatoes. Thinking about these tomatoes. It's warming me up. Listen, I kind of told you what you don't want to do, and that's a terrible way to have to start life out, thinking about what you don't want to do. But I got to explain why. I'm fixing to tell you what you should do. Here's what you should look for in tomatoes. You want a really tasty tomato. And I will tell you that in general, for a lot of reasons, smaller tomatoes are tastier tomatoes. One of the ways that you get a really big, fat tomato is to make sure that it's got a lot of water in it. That's the truth. That's the honest-to-goodness truth. Big fat tomatoes tend to have a lot of water. Smaller tomatoes don't. But smaller tomatoes are also closer to what tomatoes started out as. They're closer to the original thing. And that means they got more of that intrinsic. Oh, let's find another word. That tomato flavor that tomatoes are famous for. And there's a lot of different things going on in tomato. There's a little bit of acidity. There's a little bit of sugar. There's some other things that just, I mean, I can taste tomato sometimes in an orange. It's funny how that happens. There's a kind of a tomato-y quality. It's a savory quality that's really good, along with that sweetness. So the smaller tomatoes, I'm just telling you, and there's a lot of people who back me up on this, the smaller tomatoes tend to have a lot more of that flavor. Lot more of that flavor. So we got to think about how we find those smaller tomatoes that have a lot of flavor. I'll tell you something else we want. We want a tomato that doesn't take a long time to produce. We want a tomato that produces in less than 80 days, preferably 70 days along the coast. So we want it to start producing early because we don't want to get into that summer season. We want it to produce prolifically. We want to produce a lot of fruit because we got a lot of bugs out there. And if you're only producing 5 or 6 or 7 tomatoes per plant, the chances are bugs are going to steal half those tomatoes from you. They're going to poke a little hole, and that one hole is going to cause all sorts of mess throughout the whole rest of the tomato. So what you want to do is you want to have plenty of tomatoes out there so that if you get a few damaged by insects, you got the rest of them going. And then you kind of want to look for tomatoes that are from areas that have a increasingly, this is what I'm doing. I'm looking for tomatoes with climates similar to ours, where they've encountered some of the same problems, from soil diseases to disease plant problems up top. I don't look for heat the so-called heat-tolerant tomatoes, because I find they really have missed the point. They aren't adapted to high night temperatures. They're only adapted to high day temperatures. That's not what we want. We want a tomato that is adapted to conditions of high humidity. I've been playing with some tomatoes from Hawaii. That's an interesting place to go. And I encourage you to do that. I have not always been happy with what I found in Hawaii, I'll tell you. But I think there are probably some great varieties there, and I can't grow them all. But I have been spending a lot more time looking at tomato varieties from Cuba, from Central America. And they have generally very humid conditions, much like ours. Not consistently in Central America. Some places are pretty dry. But I find that their tomatoes do really great for us. I'm going to give you some names here real quickly. I want you to write these down, because I found that they're very good. Santiago is one that I got from the Tomato Fest catalog. Out in California. Really, really a great little tomato. Santiago. There's a couple of Santiagos out there. This is the smaller Santiago, not the Santiago from Spain, but the Santiago from, I think it's Honduras. It has performed really great for me. It has great flavor. It is one of our go-to tomatoes. It's a great one. Puerto Cortez. Another one from, I think probably from Costa Rica. Puerto Cortez has done great. The tomato size is very variable. Some of them will be, pretty big ping pong ball sized tomatoes, and some of them will be a little smaller. But they're really delicious tomatoes. Really great. Love Puerto Cortez. It's the good thing about both of those is that they tend to outcross. Which means that there's a greater chance that if you keep your own seeds, you're going to actually get some interesting tomatoes in the future. We can talk about that. Puerto Cortez and Santiago. There's another one that I really loved, and it came from Cuba, as nearly as I can tell. And it's called Riñón. And I know that some of you have been growing that one. It did fabulously for me last year. Riñón Ripple, R-I-N-O-N. It's got that little funny little squirrely line over the top of the middle N, R-I-N-O-N, Riñón tomato. Really, really an interesting and quite delicious tomato, fluted on the edges. Beautiful tomato. Beautiful slicer. Really nice. Really nice tomato. And just, you know, these three tomatoes, I got to tell you, those three tomatoes produced all year long. I mean, it's like they didn't even stop during the hot weather. Well, they slowed down a little bit, but they did not stop. And chances are, they're some of the tomatoes that you may actually be able to carry through the middle of summer. There aren't many. There are very few. But these might make it along the Gulf Coast. They might make it. Most years. Really interesting. Another one that I'll tell you about is Tegucigalpa. And again, from somewhere in Central America, Tegucigalpa being one of the capitals, of Guatemala. I'll have to think about that really carefully. My geography may be off a little bit, but it's one of those Central American countries, and a beautiful, beautiful tomato it's elongated. It'll remind you of those canning tomatoes, but this thing is incredible fresh. Just a beautiful tomato, really delicious, very prolific. Another good one to try. So those are four varieties that I'm really excited about. I'm going to keep growing them, and I'm going to try some more. I've tried some other larger tomatoes. I keep trying them. There's none that I can tell you about without some reservation, one way or another. But these four tomatoes, I just am really excited about. There's some other great ones that people try. Mexico Midget is one of the great ones that a lot of people try. It's very prolific. They really love the flavor of it. There's some other small ones that are really good, and I won't mention them all, and I'll get in trouble for not mentioning them all, but they're really good. So there you go. We're going to talk a little bit more about tomatoes today. I think David's got some thoughts here too, and we're gonna address those. Tomatoes, and we're gonna come back. We're talking about okra. But tomatoes, you got to get the seeds now. You got to get the seeds now. Alicia, you've been very patient, and I thank you for sending those in. You've got, Alicia sent me a picture of three of her citrus, and it's a very interesting profile, isn't it? A very interesting lineup right there along that wall. And the Meyer in the back is Owari. Owari is a Satsuma that is incredibly well adapted to life along the Gulf Coast. Pretty hardy. One of the hardier citrus we can grow. You know, it'll probably take down to 15 degrees if it's properly prepped for it. Maybe even lower. In fact, it has gotten even lower, and some of those have survived in my yard. They're very interesting plants, and great. And her Owari looks just absolutely beautiful. Got fruit all over it. Right next to it is a younger Meyer lemon. And it looks okay. It's doing all right. Meyer is less hardy than the Owari, but it's looking all right. So I'm going to come back. We're going to finish this up, Alicia. I didn't beat the ads, but we're going to come back.
Me and my best friend Lillian and her blue tick hound dog Gideon, sitting on the front porch, cooling in the shed, singing every song the radio played, waiting for the Alabama sun to go down to red dirt girls in a red dirt town. Me and Lillian, just across the line in a little southeast of Meridian.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Rain, rain on my face.
Oh, man, I am so ready to get back to this. Let's get back to it. Let's don't play anymore. Let's get back to it. We're juggling a couple things here. We're talking about tomatoes. I got a lot of good advice from folks. We're going to talk about it. Okay, that's enough, guys. Yeah, tone it down. So we got the tomato things. We got the citrus thing, and I want to deal with that first because Alicia's been wanting to know about this. Alicia, we looked at three varieties of citrus. Your Meyers, your Owari Satsuma is doing great. Your Meyers is doing pretty good. It's a young'un. It's not got as much cold hardiness as the Owari does. It doesn't have as much cold hardiness as the Satsuma does for two reasons. One, it's naturally less cold hardy, and two, it's younger. So you're going to have to protect it a little better if we get really cold temperatures. And so far we haven't had really cold temperatures, so it's okay. But in this profile of citrus lined up on the south side of her house, up a little north of Mobile, we have a navel orange, a case in point. Navel oranges are not well adapted. I'm going to say it one more time. Navel oranges are not well adapted to life along the Gulf Coast. Some folks get lucky. Some folks got the perfect spot. Some folks have a spot that's warmer than normal. But I will tell you that navel oranges are not as hardy as perhaps some of our other oranges. And pure oranges in general are not nearly as hardy as Satsumas and Meyer's lemons. And Meyer's lemons will get burned too. But this navel is going to be on rootstock, and that means that you may lose that navel. Orange. And because I can tell you, Alicia, what happened was it got too cold for it. That simple. Now, there are two things. Navel oranges, as I said about Meyer's lemons. Excuse me, I had to sneeze. Navel oranges are much less hardy than Satsumas, naturally. They just don't take as much cold. And down around 24 degrees, you can start getting some real damage on navel oranges, unless they're really well prepared for it. And particularly when those navel oranges are young, like yours is. Temperatures even around 26, 27, 28 degrees can be real damaging to young citrus, particularly if they're not prepared for it. And that's what happened this year. We did not have good preparation for those early freezes. We had a lot of warm-up. They weren't shut down. It was a young plant. And I can just about tell you with 90% certainty, you could tell me something else that I don't know, and I might change my mind. But with look what I'm looking at in that picture, that's cold damage. That's just pure D, cold damage. Damage with a D. That's why we say pure D. Listen, it's you're going to have to wait and just see if it comes out of it. And it may. It may. It may. And so we need to be, you know, we'll just have to look at it. Navels are not the best. You also have them planted a little bit close together, so you're probably going to run into a little bit of a problem anyway in the long run. But that navel, he's just not as hardy as those others. When you have small citrus, you got to protect them. You have to protect them. You just should assume that. And particularly, you know, even at 28 degrees, 28, 29 degrees, normally a big citrus would stand that. But if you get a warm lead up to it and you have a small citrus, you can get real damage even at 28, 29 degrees. You just need to cover those citrus on those nights. It's good that it's on the south side. I hope that's helping. I hope that's not too complicated. Alicia, we're just going to have to wait on it and see what happens. You keep taking pictures of it. Let's look at it. It's going to be April before you really know much about what's, it may even be late April, before you know whether that thing's going to come back and how well it's going to come back. So there it is. There it is. Now, I hope that helped, Alicia. If it didn't, you need to know more. You let me know. Now we're back to tomatoes, and this is good. So we prompted a lot of things here. David Hubble, my good friend, all things Louisiana, right? David has been passing on a lot of varieties that are Louisiana varieties. And I don't know them all. I'll just tell you. Dixie, I've seen a little bit about. Gulf States, I grew. I did not. Gulf States, I've always been really optimistic about, and it was okay. It was okay. I will tell you the thing about Gulf States and All Season is that they take a long time to produce the first fruit. And that can be a problem. That can be a problem. And it's that waiting that long, long time. It's just no matter how good your tomato is, it's not going to produce its best tomatoes in July. Just a caution. That's just a caution. So I always recommend, even if you want to try some of those longer varieties that take a long time, that take 80, 90 days. All Season can take a long time. Gulf States took a long time to start producing. Do them, but grow you some short season varieties too, so that you can get a lot of good tomatoes early on. We have not been thoughtful on the Gulf Coast about developing traditional Gulf Coast tomatoes that would do really well for us. We were going to market with our tomatoes. We wanted to produce tomatoes that we could sell up north, and we wanted to produce them early, and they had to look like grocery store tomatoes. And that's where we put a lot of our breeding. I'm just going to say, just something to think about, a lot of tomato varieties out of the south were commercial varieties, not varieties that were designed for really being useful in the home garden. And that's why I say, as I often say, it's just like we got off the boat with Columbus. We got to, sometimes here in the South, we got to go back and start over. And I think with the tomatoes, we got to start over. We need to rethink what we want from a tomato so that we understand we get a tomato that works for us, not a tomato that gets to market in Ohio sooner than their tomatoes. A tomato that works for us. Something to think about. So somebody asked me about Cherokee Purple. Very popular. It's one of those heirloom tomatoes that people talk about. It's a good tomato. I probably had a couple of them that I thought were fine tomatoes. They were grown under very specific conditions. Some of them were produced in my dad's old garden in central Alabama in the prairie and the Black Belt. They were exceptionally fine. Under the right conditions, Cherokee purple tomato is really good. And you may succeed in actually harvesting Cherokee tomato fruit from your garden on the Gulf Coast. And you'll be happy about that. Because it's better than not succeeding in harvesting a few. But you're not going to harvest a lot in general. And they can take a long time. And the flavor is pretty good. I would look at, if I were looking at a variety like Cherokee Purple, I would look at some of the other smaller dark tomatoes that have been bred for the Gulf Coast. Black Cherry, for example, I think has a flavor as good as Cherokee Purple. It's a smaller tomato. It's far more prolific. It was bred in the Florida Panhandle. It was bred for Florida conditions. It tends to do real well, and you get a lot of fruit out of it. So just that thought. Grow your Cherokee Purple. Grow a Black Cherry tomato next to it. It's going to be an unfair comparison because you're going to get so many Black Cherry tomatoes compared to Cherokee Purple. So you're going to have a lot more Black Cherries to sample. I think you may find that you like the Black Cherry as well as or better than the Cherokee Purple in terms of flavor. There you go. Black Creme, another one of those. Black Creme is, tells you it's from Russia. I think a lot of those dark tomatoes that are large tomatoes are not developed. They don't do as well in Gulf Coast conditions. You're not going to get a lot of them. Just by the way, heirloom. We read about them in the books. We read about them in catalogs. The catalogs ain't written for Mobile. They're written for Ohio. Just a word of warning. Black Creme's going to be okay. You might actually be able to harvest a few. Just a thought. Now, there's lots of others out there. Somebody has said to me that they tried Koala, which is a Hawaiian tomato from Tomato Fest, and did really well. And that's great. So that's a recommendation. I'd try those. There are some I can't remember all the Hawaiian tomato names, but there's a bunch of them out there. It's worth trying them. Smaller ones, bigger ones, whichever ones. We need tomatoes that can deal well with the humidity and hot nights. Hot days, not a problem for tomatoes. Hot days will never be a problem for tomatoes on the Gulf Coast or anywhere in Alabama for that matter. Hot days, they just sneak. Big deal. Doesn't bother them at all. It's the hot nights that are the problems for tomatoes, and that's why we try to get those tomatoes in and harvested before June, before the middle of June, before late June. When the nights start getting hot, and when those nights start getting hot, happens a little later, farther north in Alabama, but they all get hot eventually. All the nights. Now, those late summer nights are hot. Happens really early along the Gulf Coast. Happens a little later in July, farther north. But once those nights start getting hot, you're not going to be able to produce tomatoes very well. And the quality of tomatoes is going to decline, even if you do produce. On the Gulf Coast, I could probably name on one or two hands the number of tomatoes that are going to survive July. There aren't many. There may be a few more, but they're not ones that we typically grow. We got to rethink it. If you want a tomato to survive July, you got to be really, really careful because those hot nights are really difficult. So just something to think about. And so David's saying, you know, on that all season Gulf Coast thing, he's got his tomatoes in the ground really early on. Hey, we're going to be back. Give us a call, 251-343-0106.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Yeah, welcome back. Gulf Coast Sunday morning. David, I am really interested in Louisiana red. I've read a little bit about it. It seems to be a smaller tomato. I suspect it's going to be pretty prolific. It does take a long time to produce, so I'm really interested to see what you do. What we are talking about is finding tomatoes that work for us. And that can be hard because we didn't spend a lot of time in the South developing, thinking about how do we develop a tomato that's really well adapted to the hotter parts of the Deep South. Kentucky, they did okay. But that's border country, right? It's these places where the nights get really hot and stay hot. That's what we didn't think about. And we didn't think about places with long seasons where we've got a long growing season. How do we develop tomatoes for that? Now, I will tell you that in other parts of the world, they have been thinking about that a little better. And one of the places where I think they probably thought about it the best, though it's getting harder to get those varieties for a lot of reasons, is in Central and South America where tomatoes were born. And where they've got a lot of tomato varieties. Mexico did what works for Mexico. But Mexico's hotter, it's drier, cooler at the same time. All those things. It's a drier, cooler place than Central and South America in general. And Central and South America have done some really fascinating things with tomatoes. I think we got a lot to learn from them, just by the way. And what do we do about the other tomatoes? Well, you can give me a call. We can talk about them. We can try to figure them out and talk about it. So this is a very good question that is raised here. So everybody listen to me yammer about all these tomato varieties. And they said, we're lazy gardeners. We don't want to grow our own. Is there any? Well, let me tell you about what we did to ourselves. We have decided that a place where they have accountants in New Jersey deciding what tomatoes you should grow is where we're going to shop. Or maybe they got somebody in, who knows where the accountant is. But the accountant has no idea what life on the Gulf Coast is like. Doesn't care. The accountant for Walmart, the accountant for Home Depot and Lowe's, they want to have 12 varieties of tomato that they sell all across the country. Now, they may buy from Bonnie's Tomatoes in Alabama. But Bonnie's Tomatoes doesn't have a market on the Gulf Coast. Bonnie's Tomatoes has a much larger market that's much farther north. They don't produce a lot of tomatoes that are good for us. And they're not in the business of trying to convince you to grow the right kind of tomato for your climate. They're in the business to sell a tomato, and they're going to sell whatever some magazine wrote about last year. It doesn't matter if that magazine was in Minnesota or... So this is the truth. The truth is no. Now, if Mobile Botanical Gardens, and I don't know whether they're going to do it this year, they probably are not set up for it. It's hard to do, and particularly in the age of COVID, these things are getting even harder. They could grow their own tomatoes and have them ready for you. It's what we tried to do. We tried to set that up with some local growers. But I can just about guarantee you, I hope that some of the locally owned nurseries, and a locally owned nursery, I hope that they can grow some of their own tomatoes or find some sources of tomatoes that are different from what people are getting at Home Depot, Lowe's, Walmart. But you're not going to be able to find most of these great varieties. Now, I will tell you that black cherry, sometimes you get lucky and you'll find it at places like Lowe's, Home Depot, Walmart. You know, we are going to have to rebuild our nurseries because we've basically gutted them. And we've gutted the greenhouses that used to grow plants for us. So even many locally owned nurseries don't grow their own plants anymore. They get them from somewhere else. So Yeah, it's tough. And that's why I emphasize starting seeds now. I'll have to answer this question a gajillion times when spring comes. We'll see what the stores carry. Who knows what they carry? You'd have to get really lucky. So that's why it's so important. It's so important to start your own tomatoes and to work on that, we got a little bit of time. We got a few minutes. I got a caller. Charlie, I'm listening. Who's our caller? Bill, you there?
Yes, sir.
All right, I'm listening. We only have a little bit of time, so you may have to hold on, but let's get this thing started.
A fast, simple question. I only have room for 4 tomato plants. So if you could only pick one variety, what would be your number one choice for slicing tomatoes?
I gave 4 varieties at the start of the show, and I really like Santiago as a slicing tomato. It's not a huge tomato. It's a tomato that's best a medium-sized tomato. It's fluted, but it slices beautifully. It fits on a sandwich perfectly. You might have to put 3 slices on the sandwich, but it is delicious. It slices beautifully. It is the best innards. It is the best-looking innards of any tomato I grew. It is just absolutely gorgeous. It's called Santiago. And if I had to commit to one right now, that's what I would commit to. And that was from Tomato Fest. I also really loved Rignon, R-I-N-O-N, which was very good as a slicing tomato. It's another smaller, medium-sized slicing tomato. Those are my 2 favorites. Once you get bigger than those, the flavor doesn't improve. The size is the tomatoes are bigger, and if what you want to brag about is size is not flavor, you can get some bigger tomatoes. But those 2 are really excellent small to medium size tomatoes that we use all the time on sandwiches. They're absolutely delicious.
Spell that for me, please.
Santiago is S-A-N-T-I-A-G-O. Like Santiago, like Santiago, how would you say it?
Right.
Santiago. I don't know how else to say it. And it's, now listen, it's from a place called Tomato Fest. Tomato Fest. It's out in California. They have the seeds for that. I checked. They've got them again this year. It's a really good one. The other one that I recommended was Rignon, R-I-N-O-N. R-I-N-O-N. Rignon, and it's from Cuba, and it did really well for me as a slicing tomato last year. I got that from Experimental Farm Network, I think. I'll have to look that up.
So you couldn't just buy the plants. You're going to have to buy the seeds. Is that right?
That's right. That's right. Okay. Now, if you want to buy seeds, we'll just have to wait. And, you know, if you want to buy plants, we'll have to wait and see what everybody's offering. I have no idea what they're going to offer. I guarantee you there ain't going to be much selection. And I guarantee you that 90% of the selection was going to be designed to sell well in Ohio, not in Alabama.
Right, that's what I'm afraid of. Okay. Well, I got the spelling written down, so I'm going to try both of those.
Hey, and listen, you call me back. When you get the seeds in, you call me back. Let's talk about how to start them. Okay?
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast with Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Welcome back. So we decided a chilly, wet morning is the time to talk about tomatoes, and that's what we're doing. And CB Carl always keeps me posted when I forget the name of Tomato Fest. Thank you, CB. I just was looking back how many times you had to remind me. Yeah. So there it is. I think CB gets a lot of it. So CB says he tried Clint Eastwood's Rowdy Red. I have no idea. You know, I don't know. Don't know why it's called Clint Eastwood's Rowdy Red. But he tried it, and he said it did really well for him. Alicia wanted me to spell Tegucigalpa, and it's going to be easier to say. Listen, if you're looking for that tomato, it's a little harder to find now. It's I think Croatian Seeds may be the only place carrying it. But if you want to look it up, it's spelled like the capital of Honduras. So look up the capital of Honduras. There's the spelling. That's what it's named for. Sorry. Ellen is asking me, and it's a good question. Is it too late? No, not too late at all, Ellen. It is somewhat better. A lot of people have already started their tomatoes, and I try to get people started earlier. But no, it's not too late. And I think, you know, you can – it's not too late. It's not too late. You can get those tomatoes in, get them planted next week, and even along the Gulf Coast, you'll be in fine shape. If you're living a little north of the Gulf Coast, it's just about the right time. It's just about the right time to get those tomatoes in, get them started. If you start them too early, and that's happened. Ellen, didn't you start those eggplants? You had them really early. They're huge, you know? And then you got to nurse them along, but for tomatoes, this is about the right time. It's about the right time. If you can get those seeds in, I still think it's really good to go ahead and do that. Tomatoes that are going to be available in stores. You know, it's gotten harder to predict because more and more the stores along the Gulf Coast, I don't know that it's more, but I mean, a few years ago, if you were on the Gulf Coast, when you went to the big box stores, what they were going to sell you was something like Better Boy, which was okay. It's okay. You didn't get many tomatoes out of it, and it was an okay tomato. It really was. For a while, you could get Celebrity. For a short while, you could get Dono, which was an incredible tomato. It was just lucky. I mean, you were just lucky. It was a great tomato for the Gulf Coast, Dono hybrids. You can't get the Dono hybrid anymore. And I have found that the selections that they made from Dono that weren't hybrids, they aren't as good. But now, increasingly, what they're selling, because everybody got the heirloom thing, you know, I got heirloom on the brain. And if you understand what an heirloom is, it's a good thing, but it ain't what people think. And so now anything that's got the name heirloom on it and that was written about by somebody in Ohio about their grandmother's favorite heirloom, well, that's what they're selling. And that's unfortunate for the Gulf Coast because those heirlooms that work in Ohio, they don't work as well on the Gulf Coast. It's what we think about. Sean has asked me, did I mention Sun Gold? Ellen's already got her Sun Gold started. Is that not right, Ellen? Yes, indeed. Juliet Sun Gold. Sun Gold is a great tomato. It really is a fine tomato. Do I have any? I wish that it's got a few problems in rainy conditions and other things, but it is a delicious tomato, very distinctive flavor. And Sun Gold is one of those tomatoes that just basically, if you want to know why I don't worry so much about growing really big tomatoes anymore, just start with Sun Gold. Yeah, great flavor, incredible flavor. It is very hard to reproduce something that is that delicious in a bigger tomato. Small tomato, prolific tomato, can do very well for us, starts very early. It's a hybrid tomato, not an heirloom. There are some issues with hybrids. One, you got to make sure people are still producing them, but still, people are still producing Sun Golds. It is not the perfect tomato, but it is a very, very good tomato. Highly recommend it. Really great one, too. And you'll often... you'll often find Sun Gold for sale at certain places, though I'm not seeing it for sale as much at the big box stores anymore. I don't really want to spend the rest of my life looking to see what the big box stores have decided you ought to be growing, or that they're going to allow you to grow. So I, you know, maybe they sell it there more often, but I do usually check them out once or twice a year. I try not to tell them what I say about them on the air. You can see why. Lord have mercy. And, you know, big box stores may be fine for other things, but there's a problem. There's a problem. We have ceded our, we gave them the keys to our gardens. And that's a bad, sad thing. That is a bad, sad thing. And our gardens are going downhill as a result. Real big problem. So Ellen says, Sun Gold is awesome. I have so much I make sauce from them. Yeah. It's good. Yeah, so Ellen said, yeah, I didn't remember those eggplants, Ellen. And she said she had to cover them because she got them in because she ignored me and put them in the ground, but they were a pain to cover. And they do not like cold weather. Dona was one of the things I liked about Dona, and David said he thought they were okay. They were productive. They had a good flavor. They were very productive. They had a good flavor. They were they seemed to be pretty resistant to a lot of soil diseases and to foliar diseases. They were slow to develop a lot of problems. And it's kind of a moot point, though. They also produced early, which was really nice, much earlier than other tomatoes. I thought they had a better flavor than Celebrity and produced at about the same time. The problem, it's a moot point because they don't produce them anymore. And since then, I kind of hold Dona out as a good market tomato. It was a good market tomato, a tomato that was designed for the commercial market. In fact, it was widely grown in Alabama for the commercial market. And people are used to market tomatoes. It's what they buy in the grocery store. They aren't the best tomatoes. It's just what people get used to. And Dona for market tomato was one of the best. But it's a moot point. David, and we could argue about it, and I could try to make a case. Well, it's pretty good, but, you know, don't matter anymore. You ain't going to find it. It's just not there. There are some Dona selections that have the name Dona on them, but they're not the classic hybrid, and they don't do as well. They take longer to produce. I don't find their flavor is any better. And, you know, I tried some others that are similar to Dona this year, but they were okay. They were not great. I don't get it. I wouldn't even get as enthusiastic about Dona anymore. So there it is. There it is. You know, one thing too, and I will say this, and David's got this right, and we need to emphasize this. David Hubbell said, look, if I'm going to be growing these tomatoes that take a long time to produce, and he's got some that take a long time to produce, I'm going to get them in the ground before March 15th. And that means you got to be prepared to do that. And you probably, you know, in some areas, you probably need a little extra protection. Now, that's along the Gulf Coast. Farther north, you can plant them a little later, but not much, too much later if you're going to have a long season variety. So I always say play with those long season varieties, the ones that takes 80, 90 days, 100 days sometimes. But if you really want to eat tomatoes, you might want to have some that produce in 70 days or sometime between 65 and 80 days. That's probably a little bit better. Hey, we're going to be back. Give us a call, 251-343-0106.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
All right. Let's get back to business. Let's get back to these tomato questions. You know, it was the thing to do, right? Cold day, chilly day. It's time to talk tomatoes. It's time. This is really, and you're not going to get this story again because we're, as Ellen points out, we're kind of running out of time. But you got time. Go ahead and order your seeds. Get them going. I've tried. I tried last week to get you going. So we can talk about all that. David B asked me about hot water treatment for seeds, and because some varieties they recommend it. I will tell you, I can tell you what hot water treatment's about. I can tell you why I haven't done it. Some diseases are carried on seeds. Bacterial diseases, some fungal diseases can be carried on the seeds. I have not had a big problem with those diseases, I don't think, in the past. It could have been a problem on some of my, I just really hadn't seen those problems, and I don't know why. It may be because the seed I'm buying has already been pre-treated, or it's grown in conditions where it's not susceptible to these diseases. But if you're worried about certain types of diseases that that are less common diseases, we rarely talk about them here on tomatoes, for example, you can heat treat your seed, and you do it by putting them in a hot water bath. Now, this is not just any hot water bath, folks. It's got to be real precise. And the commercial facilities, they set it up just perfectly. If there were a need for it, what you would do is you'd pre-warm your seeds just a little bit in some warm water. And you got to do this just before you plant them, because I'm talking about you can't, once you do this, you got to plant those seeds right away. But you could start them, put them in about 100 degrees temperature, not too warm, just a little warm. You got to use a thermometer to do this, and then you heat that water up. Then you take them out of there. Heat a little pot of water up. Heat it precisely to about 120, 125 degrees, somewhere right in there, and keep it there precisely for about anywhere from 20 to 30 minutes. And if it gets too hot, if it gets to 135 degrees, you're probably going to damage the seed. If it stays too cool, 115 degrees, you're probably not going to kill the diseases. So it's kind of a tricky thing to do. It's a lot of trouble. Maybe someday I'm going to have to think about it and do that. I haven't done it yet, and I don't recommend it, at least right now. I think it's a pain to do something like that. And I don't see that there's a good need for it right now. But somebody who knows better, maybe my good friend John Olive, will say, yeah, you know why your tomatoes don't do well? It's because you got this disease and you should have heat treated the seeds. But I haven't seen that so far. So there it is. That's what that's about. Somebody asked me, what makes tomatoes grown on Sand Mountain seem to taste better? Now, I'm going to tell you a story. How do I tell you this story? Because I've grown tomatoes on Sand Mountain, and they're pretty good. I don't think they're as good as the tomatoes that I grew in the Black Belt in some ways, but they're pretty good. Sand Mountain had a great reputation for tomatoes, and one of the reasons it did was because the nights stayed cool. Much cooler than, say, the Tennessee Valley. Much cooler than the Gulf Coast. The nights stayed cool. And it was one of the coolest places for growing tomatoes along the Gulf Coast. In Alabama. Now, at one time, I think Sand Mountain genuinely had incredibly good tomatoes. In fact, I'm sure of it. I actually had some back in the day, and I've had some of my tomatoes, and they're really good. They are really good. I will tell you that the varieties of tomatoes that I am eating off of Sand Mountain now are just, they might as well have been grown in Florida in February. And so what's happened is Sand Mountain has switched to these varieties that are commercial varieties that they can ship all, and they've lost that superb quality that used to be. I do not find, and somebody should come and just make me eat a good Sand Mountain tomato. I can't find a commercial variety of Sand Mountain tomato that has that old Sand Mountain flavor. We've lost it. Sand Mountain used to be have one of the most diverse agricultural systems of any place in Alabama. Incredible. Green beans, the green beans on Sand Mountain were incredible. Tomatoes on Sand Mountain were incredible because of those cool nights and because of the soils and some other things and because the farmers knew how to do it. Right now, Sand Mountain has switched from being one of the most diverse agricultural economies in the state to being one of the least diverse. Basically, the only people that make money on Sand Mountain have chicken houses, and boy, do they stink. And if you're growing a field row crop, it's the same thing they're trying to grow in Illinois, except they make half the money doing it. It's just bizarre. You know, why in the world on Sand Mountain you'd grow soybeans, corn, and it just doesn't make any sense. You just don't make much money doing it, but the government supports it all, et cetera. So it's a shame. We've lost Sand Mountain tomatoes. I think they were pretty good. They were cool. They were good because of the cool nights. But when you change varieties and you turn to a variety that doesn't have flavor, that simply has a nice red skin and that's hard as a rock, you lose it. And we lost it. We lost Sand Mountain tomatoes. I hate to say that. I hate to say that. Could you UVC sterilize the seeds? Well, I don't know. I don't know. I just don't know. I haven't found a need to sterilize any of the seeds that I have. So there it is. I don't know. I don't generally sterilize my seeds. Sometimes I will heat treat seeds. I will heat treat seeds by pouring them in very hot water. And I probably have killed a few seeds that way, but I've also gotten them to germinate in some cases. But I don't really, it's not really the same as heat treating. And I don't know. That's a much tougher question. Much tougher question. So let's see what else we got here. Have we gone over these tomato varieties pretty well? You know, it's... let's think about it. We've got varieties. The varieties that I recommended were varieties from Central America, where these tomatoes grow really, really well, and where tomatoes, where I should say that they've been growing tomatoes for a long time, and they grow the tomatoes we get from those places. They're from climates that most resemble the climates we have in much of Alabama. Very humid, very warm nights. Worth something we got to think about. And that's why I recommended, and also lots of bugs. Big thing to think about. Lots of insect pressure. And so if you got something like, I just pulled two marmorated stink bugs off my desk. Nasty old things. Fingers still smell like marmorated stink bugs. We got tons of stink bugs, and we're you know, as if we didn't have enough, we imported more. Crazy people. And so we did, and we got all these marmorated stink bugs, and we got all of the long, the leaf-footed stink bugs, and we got all the green stink bugs, and we got so many varieties of stink bugs, I don't even know what they all are anymore. I mean, it's just confusing. And they're all going to be hitting your tomatoes. And so there's also the worms, the caterpillars. We can beat those pretty easily if we're careful, if we're smart. But it's hard to beat the stink bugs. And the only way to beat the stink bugs is to grow more tomatoes than the stink bugs can eat and mess up. And that's why I recommend those smaller varieties, the more prolific varieties, small to medium. And that's not the reason why. It's one of the reasons why. I mean, everything points to growing the smaller to medium varieties for the Gulf Coast. They have better flavor. Better flavor. It's true. They're prolific. They usually, they will set their fruits much earlier in the year. They also seem to be better at weathering the very hot temperatures in July. So smaller tomatoes, I find, will often weather those hot nights and will continue will sometimes continue to produce into fall. That's a rarity on the Gulf Coast, but it's an incredible thing with those tomatoes. You can really do it well. Better taste, more prolific. They can weather the heat. They deal better with the rainfall, and they deal better with the bugs. So now you see why I recommend those smaller varieties. Give us a call. 251-343-0106.
To Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
All right, welcome back. Listen, I didn't quite mean to make it all tomato show, but we've just about nearly succeeded. I want to Clay makes good recommendations from Birmingham, saying that he's settled on Black Pearl, Super Sweet 100, and Mexico Midget for the most flavorful, prolific, and easy to grow cherry tomatoes for central Alabama. So he's up in Birmingham. Those of us in South Alabama sometimes have a hard time thinking of Birmingham as central Alabama. It's really the gateway to North Alabama, but it is considerably warmer, no question, Clay, than Huntsville and Sand Mountain, in some of those areas. But I think he's got some good information there. Mexico Midget really does well. There's some other small tomatoes that people are really sold on, and I loved Coyote, C-O-Y-O-T-E, Coyote, however you want to pronounce it. Great tomato from Veracruz. Had a few little problems, but it was great, really tasty. So all this is great. Black Pearl, I have not grown. I keep meaning to, and I never do. So that's good. And that brings up another issue. That brings up another issue that I think is important to discuss. We got a lot to learn, and I ain't learned it all. I've kind of that's why I always lay out, here's the kind of tomatoes that we want. Here are the kind of tomatoes that we want. These are the attributes we would want from tomatoes. We want them to have good flavor. We want them to be prolific. We want them to start pretty early. We want them to be heat resistant and resistant to hot nights. Not just hot days. That's why a lot of the heat-tolerant tomatoes are not really good for us. They were really developed for hot days in Florida during winter. Bizarre. But they're not necessarily, but those nights in Florida were cooler. They aren't really designed for our hot summer nights. So the heat-resistant tomatoes, jet set or whatever, all that stuff, they don't really help. They don't help you a whole lot. Look for it, and they don't taste very good either. So look, you know, these are the things we're looking for. And it may be that there's no need to say, oh, well, I got to have a big tomato. Well, why do you have to have a big tomato? Because sometimes it's harder to find these attributes in a big tomato, including flavor, than it is in some of the smaller tomatoes. So some things to think about. But I have not grown them all. Big tomatoes, medium tomatoes, small tomatoes. Always interested to hear what you're thinking about. I'm just suggesting, as you're thinking about it, think about these attributes and think about what we need out of tomatoes here along the Gulf Coast and in Alabama. There it is. Tara, how are you doing?
Good morning. Are you there?
How are you? I am here.
I'm sorry, you're breaking up. Is this a bad connect?
No, you're sounding fine.
Okay, good. Thank you. First of all, I'm gonna lay out the first thing, the difficulty thing. Okay, first, if we're gonna have a diatribe about local seed sources and we can't get them, then isn't it our own fault? I mean, New Jersey is. I'm not pro New Jersey, anti Alabama by any means. But I'm not anti-New Jersey either, you know. It's like, but if they're the only seeds you can get, isn't it our own fault if we're not doing more to actually have it work for us in this Gulf Coast insulation, encapsulation, I guess would be a better. But, okay, first let me present my suggestion on the heat treatment for seeds. If I'm understanding you correctly, 100 degrees, which is slightly above the human body temperature, right, into water. And then second step, heat to 120 to 30 degrees in that same water and leave it third step for half an hour. Well, it seems to me that if I'm understanding correctly, and I'll appreciate your edification, that's sort of the way that we feed human infants, isn't it? And I would suggest that the easy way to do that sort of thing, if you wanted to try it for us here who wanted to work on having more local seeds available, you know, for us to share with each other, a thermos bottle, even a child's lunchbox thermos bottle, you know, because it's not going to take a whole bunch of water to do that, right? Please help.
First off, I don't think we need to spend our time thinking about heat treatment of seeds. I don't think that for most seeds that we have, I don't think it's helpful. I wanted to answer that question from one of our folks who was asking about it, but I haven't seen that we actually need to do that. The only reason I heat up seeds is to get them to germinate a little quicker, like okra, which seems to respond to heat, but it's not about all that precise 122 degree temperatures. I've got to tell you, I got to be honest, life is short. I ain't got time to do that. I mean,
lately. I have.
yeah. So I'll go the distance for some things, like planting seeds, but that, see, heat treatment of seeds is probably not something we need to focus on. So I'll just say, yeah, in general, I wouldn't worry about it. I don't think a thermos would work if I thought it was necessary, but I'm pretty sure
a
thermos
would
not. Yeah, probably not. You'd have to be very precise about the temperature. It's a moot point. Because we don't need to worry about it.
It's too scientific, in other words, for the home grower.
Yeah, we don't have the right equipment. If we had the right equipment, if we had the right machinery, maybe it would make sense. Though even then, it can create some problems. I think they steam treat a lot of the heat-treated seeds, but we're not really trying to do that.
Well, it doesn't steam until 212, does it? I mean, steam is not 130 degrees.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, it comes out of a coffee cup.
Well, here's the, yeah. So I'm sure that they have ways of sort of figuring out how to do all that. I don't know how to do it. I don't want to do it. I want to grow tomatoes. I don't want to think about heat treating tomato seeds. And I don't think I need to. I don't think I need to. You know, Tara, to back to your original point, though, I'm out of my depth, and so are you when we talk about heat treatment of seeds here.
Okay.
Back to your original point, I do think we need the challenge for us in Alabama is that we're not New York, and as long as we have a national economy, and we assume that Home Depot and Lowe's cares about the differences in places, which they do not. They want every place to be the same. As long as we depend on them, we're going to be left out. And so New York, they're kind of okay because, you know, there's a bunch of folks in New York and they got a lot of money and they're going to be selling seeds to them and they're going to be selling plants to them
that are ideally suited for them. There's a bunch of folks in Alabama that got a lot of money too. I'm sorry.
Not that many. And that's the problem. So we're always going to be on the fringes, and we're going to have to think harder, much harder, about how we do things here. That's just the thing about living in Alabama.
And that's what we're best at. Because
sometimes.
We don't have that bunch of wasteful, you know, we can, you know, throw it away.
Yeah, so, but we need to, but we are going to have to come up with our own seed sources and our own plant sources. And one of the things about having something like Mobile Botanical Gardens, it's always an effort. Mobile Botanical Gardens will always be as good as the amount of effort and time that the community puts into it, which, from the city's perspective, is not much. But Mobile Botanical Gardens could be a great center for thinking about those kinds of things and for producing those seeds and for producing those kinds of plants. I'm not saying it always is. I was director there at one time, and I can tell you nothing was ever perfect because we tried to do a lot without a lot of money. But it really is important to have places like that, and it's important to encourage, to support your local nurseries. If you can get something cheaper at Home Depot and Lowe's, you ought to go to your local nursery and get it if you can.
Well, my question about our local nurseries is, if they're not selling them here, where are they selling them? Are they selling them to New Jersey so New Jersey can resell them in a business sense?
Yes. Well, and by local nurseries, I mean local retail nurseries. But... yeah, so we'll.
I do too.
yeah. But I local retail nurseries—they're selling their things locally, but they have to. You're going to have to see them as a destination. You know, I think. And you're going to have to encourage local. Let me finish.
What I understand, if you go to the regular retail nurseries locally, they don't sell to private owners. They sell only retail.
Yeah, we're gonna have to take a break here because we got a commercial coming up. But we're going to talk a little bit more about retail and how you get the right retail, when we come back. But yes, I do think that it's really important that we support local retailers and then not only do we support those local retailers, we encourage them to do the right thing by saying, boy, I'd sure like for these tomatoes to be really good for us, to be available to us. Charlie?
Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
All right, let's get back to it. We got a little bit of time. So Jim in Georgetown asked me, he wanted to grow paste tomatoes this year. And so this is a good time for me to name those tomatoes that really did well for me last year. Jim, try, and you're going to ask me to spell it, Tegucigalpa. Tegucigalpa, it is basically a paste tomato. They're great fresh. They're delicious fresh, but it is designed as a paste tomato. It did very well for me. I want you to try it, Tegucigalpa. It's a little hard to find. I found some seeds last year. I think you can get them from a place called Croatian Seeds. If you don't want to have to write it down, just remember that it's the capital of Honduras, Tegucigalpa. That's the name of the tomato. The capital of, look up the capital of Honduras. You got it. Boom. It's a great one. Tegucigalpa. The other tomatoes that I talked about, which I think are really good, we've got a lot of them out there, that a lot of people have recommended today. Told you about the qualities. I will say that I have been very pleased with Santiago. It's done very well for me for a number of years in multiple gardens. I think that the Cuban tomato called Riñon is going to also be a really good one. It's been really good. Puerto Cortez has been good for me and many other people. Really great tomato. Puerto Cortez, PuertoCortez, Puerto Cortez. Santiago, Santiago. Tegucigalpa, like the capital. And then Riñon, R-I-N-O-N. R-I-N, that middle N has a little tilde over it, the little squiggle on top of the N, which means you pronounce it Riñon, but it's R-I-N-O-N, Riñon tomato. Really a great tomato that has done really well for me. Now, these are just the ones that I've tried that I feel like, boy, there's some others that I've grown that I did just perfectly fine, but they had a lot of faults. They didn't produce as long. They weren't as heat tolerant. These produced were a lot more heat tolerant. They outgrew the diseases. They were incredibly productive and incredibly delicious. Is that it? No. There's a bunch of others out there. Are you going to be able to go to Home Depot and find those? No, you're not. If you're going to wait for Home Depot, we can wait, and maybe you can get black cherry or some of the others. But there it is. Someone asked me about saving monarch caterpillars from coal. Probably not the best idea. We should talk about monarchs next week. It's an interesting thing. Somebody also said that the potatoes are available from Old Time Feed and Seed. This is great news. This is the time that you should be starting your potatoes. Start them as early as possible. And we're going to, listen, boy, we're going to run out of time. Would you please remind me next week to talk about how to get tomatoes growing? Go ahead and warm them up inside. Warm them up. Get them on top of your refrigerator. Get them sprouting good. Once those tomatoes are sprouting good, then you can put them outside. I'm going to tell you how to do it next week. Please remind me to talk about how to do it, because they are susceptible to frost, but they will do well planted in January if you do it this way. I'm going to talk about it next week. Jane, I'm listening. What's up?
Bill, we've got some woods that are covered up with wisteria vines and ivy vines. Reclaim those to be able to plant some camellias.
Yeah, two real toughies, aren't they?
Right.
So, and each one has its own difficulties. Have you cut the wisteria back at all yet?
Right, some vines were as big as a softball.
Yeah, so that means it's going to sprout like crazy. And one of the things you might want to do is, before you do anything else, go ahead and cut that trunk back where you cut it back, cut it again just a little bit lower, and then put some Roundup on there, just straight Roundup. Do not put some kind of fancy other kind of thing on there. It has to be Roundup. You don't want it to be a fast-acting Roundup, which is not really Roundup. You need it to be just pure glyphosate and package instructions. Just paint it on there. Paint it right on that trunk, right where you cut it back. That'll help. But what you're going to find is that you've got roots all over the place, and they're going to sprout like crazy. Take some of the longer stems that are coming up around there, and get a milk jug. A lot of people have heard me say this, but it works. Get a milk jug.
Okay.
Doesn't have to. It should not have milk in it anymore.
Right.
Put your Roundup in there. Just put mix up. You're only mixing it so that it's about a quarter full. And just put your Roundup mixture in there. Regular old Roundup, Roundup concentrate. Mix it with water until that milk jug is about a quarter full. Then take that vine and twist it down into that milk jug.
Okay.
And any other vines you can find, just twist it down in there and let it absorb that. Now, it's only going to work when the vines have green on them. You can cut the vine and put it on the trunk anytime, but putting it in the milk jug is going to require that the vines have foliage on them when you do that. But you can twist it down in there, and that works really well. And that way it won't get diluted if it rains. You can leave it sit there for a while. It won't spill all over everything. And it's a very good way of dealing with the wisteria. You're probably going to have to do it to two or three different vines. Wisteria is very persistent. The ivy can be even more difficult, and because it has a glossy surface. And what that means is you're going to have to wait till it puts on new growth, and you can spray it with Roundup too, or you can put it into a as I described, you can put it into a milk jug. But it's better with the ivy because it has that glossy surface on the leaves. To do it on the newer leaves when they come out, they'll take it up a little better.
Great advice. Okay, I'm going to try both of those.
All right, and you'll have other questions, so call me back when you do.
All right, thanks a bunch.
You're welcome. Well, look at that. So we did talk about something else besides tomatoes this morning. We'll have... somebody was asking me about when it's asking you to plant space plants 18 to 24 inches apart, why would the row spacing be different? Well, for one, you got to get to the plants. the between plant spacing is designed to with the idea that they're going to get more light from the sides than they do sitting next to each other. You can redesign all that. Sometimes let's call me back next week when we have time. Let's talk about plant spacing on plants. It's an interesting question. I'll tell you how I view it, and you can view it your own way. I'm so excited about those potatoes. We're going to talk about potatoes next week. We're going to talk about them for a good long while, but we're out of time this week. We'll be back next week.